The 2013 state legislative session is well underway, and this hour we're going to get the inside scoop, as it were, from two state lawmakers from western Wisconsin. By far the largest piece of legislation introduced thus far is Governor Scott Walker's 2013-2015 biennial budget, which includes some highly debated provisions for K-12 schools, the UW system, and transportation. But other bills have been introduced too, having to do with recalls, unborn children, malpractice suits, sand mines, to name a few. And we'll talk about some legislation aimed at creating more regulations for sand mining concerns. It's all this hour on the West Side Legislative Roundup. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us this evening. I'd like to welcome my guests, who are both joining us from our Madison studios. First, I'll introduce State Senator Kathleen Vinehout. She's a Democrat from Alma. Kathleen, thank you so much for being with us.
It's great to be with you, Rich.
And have we got State Representative Scott Suter as well?
Yes, sir.
Scott, thank you so much for making it to the program. Scott Suter, Republican Representative from Abbotsford, also the Majority Leader in the Assembly. And next, I want to introduce or invite, I guess, the listeners to the program. It wouldn't be a real West Side without our audience participation. Now's your chance to ask direct questions to the lawmakers that are elected to represent you. So call in by dialing 800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615, and you can also post a question or a comment on the West Side Facebook page. So I'd like to start our discussion about the 2013 session by getting right into the budget. As I mentioned, it's a big piece of legislation. There's a lot of moving parts in there. And one thing that's been coming up a lot, it's definitely the most talked about portion of the governor's biennial budget, is the provision to expand the taxpayer-supported school voucher program. Representative Suter, why is this so controversial?
Well, I'm not sure. I know that there are those that are adamantly opposed to school choice, but what we want, I think what the point of the governor's budget and the point that many of us who are school choice supporters believe that school choice has been proven to give low-income students and those students who are failing, particularly in Milwaukee schools, now Racine schools, a better chance of succeeding. And how we expand that is going to be up to the legislature. But I do think there are areas of the state that type of competition can help, particularly low-income students. But, you know, I think parents deserve that type of choice. So it is a huge debate in the legislature, and many of us would like to see the successes we've seen in Milwaukee and Racine. Other communities be allowed to enjoy those successes as well, and frankly, taxpayers and parents who I believe and many of us believe should have a choice when it comes to their children's education. And that's not to say many of our public schools don't do a great job, but injecting some competition and allowing for other opportunities, I think, is what parents that I've been speaking to really would like to see in many areas of the state.
Were you surprised when some Republican lawmakers, some of the more conservative folks, Mike Ellis comes to mind, who have said that there are a number of that they don't want this in the budget? Were you surprised to hear that kind of news coming from your side?
Well, I think what they actually said was, Rich, that they would like to see it done in a different way. And not that they don't want to see it,
right,
as a tool or a mechanism and maybe as a standalone bill perhaps, but they're not against the program necessarily, but they want to see it done in a different way. So we'll have those debates and we'll have those discussions as we go through. But the point is, I think we need to have this discussion and this debate in the legislature between, you know, Democrats and Republicans and all of us on whether or not school choice works, whether it is a good tool to utilize in many communities, and whether parents should have that choice when it comes to their children's education. So how we get and arrive at a school choice agreement has yet to be decided, but I believe there are many, many supporters throughout the legislature, both in the Assembly and the Senate, that believe this is an important tool to give to parents regarding their children's future and education?
Senator Vinehout?
Well, I take a very different approach. I would say if we have a 20-year-old program that costs a lot of money and is not working, the discussion should be about getting rid of it altogether, not expanding it. We're looking at a program that is, under the governor's proposal, drawing down dollars from our local schools and drawing down dollars from the general fund, which we use for all sorts of discretionary programs that we like parks and health care and, of course, public education. My colleague, Representative Souter, talks a little bit about the origins of the program being to help inner-city poor children. But the way that the program has been expanded over the years, actually, if you're a family of four with an income of $70,000 or more a year, you would be eligible for the program. And we know from the history, recent history in Racine, that it does increase property taxes. And when I think about choice, I would say we do have choice. It's called open enrollment, and a lot of parents do use open enrollment to go to different schools. One of the biggest concerns I hear from my local school districts here in Eau Claire and Altoona and Chippewa Falls and Durand is that the school report card was really put together as a way to begin to measure student performance. The very first report card came out this fall. But when we look at the details in the budget, the governor is proposing in his budget that if a school district has 4,000 students or more and two or more failing or near failing schools on the report card, they would be the private school voucher program and the independent charter school program will come into the entire district, not just to the failing schools. And once it came in, it would never go away. Most of the people that I speak with are not in favor of the program.
But if I'm a parent and I have a kid that is a child that is going to a school district that has, you know, has been struggling or is deemed failing under the state's guidelines, why would it be a bad thing for me to be able to send my kid to a school that would have better results possibly?
Well, it's a good question, and I would say that if you're going to a school that is failing, excuse me, you can go to another school through open enrollment, or you could go to a private school and have the dollars come out of your own pocket. What this proposal does is to have the dollars come out of the state's pocket at the expense of the local public school.
I have to interject, if I may.
Sure.
It is important to note that school choice— the school choice program as it exists, and if we continue it, by law, cannot take any money away from home districts. It can't take any money away from local school districts or statewide. And I often hear the argument that, you know, we're taking the money away from our local schools and sending it to the Milwaukee Parental Choice Program. That is not true in any respect. PolitiFact called this claim absolutely false 2 years ago, and Fiscal Bureau memos show time after time that school districts across the state would actually be forced to raise property taxes in order to recoup the loss in state aid from eliminating the program. So this isn't a program that steals from local public schools. Yes, there would be money in terms of taxpayer money injected into the school choice program, but if you have a failing school and like my respected colleague just said, if you have a 20-year-old program that isn't working, it may be time to close the program. Well, instead of doing that with some schools, we continually to force students to go there even though they're failing. And we want to give those parents that decide. If public schools are a better option, then their parents won't send their children to choice schools. But if their children find a system that works for them so they can succeed, we want to at least give them the option and the choice, because it really is their money. And I think that's an important part of the debate here. How we do it, how much we spend, is going to be up to the legislature. But giving those parents the opportunities for their children that may not be succeeding in public schools for whatever reason, I think is worthy of discussion.
Now,
Rich, if I could just interject.
Senator Vinehout, sure.
Thanks. Sorry about that. I have heard a lot of my Republican colleagues at different events talk about MPS, and they talk about how if the school choice program went away in Milwaukee, the average school district in western Wisconsin would see less, not more money. We're not talking about Milwaukee public schools going away. What the governor is proposing is expanding it to at least 9 school districts, and both La Crosse and Eau Claire are just a few percentage points, or in Eau Claire's case, just a tenth of a percentage point away from the program expanding in our world in Eau Claire. So when we talk about the program expanding, there is no question that this is drawing down the equalized aid that all of the schools share. The dollars come off the top, and the Fiscal Bureau, again, has been very clear about the dollars that it's going to take. And we're talking about an increase in general fund dollars and an increase in what I would say a drawdown or taking away the equalized aid for each of the schools, including rural schools that would never be eligible under the current guidelines. Rural schools like, you know, Cochran, Fountain City, Alma, Durand, those schools are going to see less equalized aid available. And when we talk about this program, I say a 20-year program that doesn't have any evidence of succeeding. The Legislative Audit Bureau did a 5-year analysis of research that had been done by a firm in Arkansas. And if you look at the details, on one measure, the public school's better. On another measure, the private school's better. And when you take them all together, there is no clear pattern of whether a public school in Milwaukee or a private school does better. We do know that each of those schools have less money to deal with if this expansion would go into effect, which is, of course, why all of the superintendents in western Wisconsin that I've spoken with are strongly opposed to it. The school boards are opposed to it. The teachers are opposed to it. The parents are opposed to it.
For our listeners,
Okay.
Go ahead. Representative Souter, go ahead.
No, I didn't want to interrupt the senator, but I do think poising this and trying to get people to believe that this is a choice between public school money and school choice money, I think is a bit disingenuous and incorrect. It is not as though the money in the state budget will be taking away from the public school portion. In fact, I would argue, and I think the center and I can agree on this, there will be more money injected in public schools than the governor's original budget proposal. How much more that is, we can debate. But I think there's going to be more money placed in there by the Joint Finance Committee and both houses of the legislature. Both Republicans and Democrats are talking about that. What we're also talking about at the same time is how much money we place in the school choice program to allow it to expand to the point possibly where the governor has suggested. So I think there's going to be increases in both categories, but it is not as though the increase in school choice is going to become at the expense of the money we're talking about for public schools, because I believe there's going to be money for both. But it's a matter of, you know, obviously balancing what that money is. But I don't want anyone to have the illusion that somehow, you know, there's a pool of money and school choice is going to draw down the amount that public schools get. I think that's an inaccurate assessment of the entire situation.
Now, my turn. I want to remind our listeners that we're talking about the 2013 state legislative session. We're talking about the governor's budget proposal at this point, which is going to have a lot of kicks at the cat as it works its way through the legislature. We've got Republican State Representative Scott Souter on the phone of Abbotsford, or on the line from our studios in Madison. Also, Democratic State Senator Kathleen Vinehout of Alma is joining him in the studio in Madison. Listeners, it's your chance to ask direct questions to both of these guests. The number is 1-800-228-5615. And with that, I want to get back to the voucher program that we were speaking about. A lot of people see this as kind of a southeastern Wisconsin thing. Representative Souter, would you welcome this to your school district at your voting address?
Well, you know, I have a very great school system in my hometown. Abbotsford's doing very, very well. They do incredibly well in terms of how they serve and how they work with the community and how they actually are very successful in getting extra money in addition to the state aid they receive. Now, most of the school districts in my area receive, nearly two-thirds state funding. I think that's a success. I'd like to obviously see that continue, if not even more. But I think many of those schools, because they are rural schools, I think they do a great job. That is not to say that some schools throughout the state may be failing. And those schools that are, and if those parents, I can't say that's true in Abbotsford. I'm very proud of my hometown and very proud of my school that I graduated from because I think they're doing a great job. That unfortunately isn't the case in every single school district. So where there are failing schools, I see no problem and have absolutely no qualms about allowing for some type of competition. We're not closing down the schools, but we want to make them better because the goal here is to educate the children in the best possible manner. And that money and where that money is spent, I think, should be up to the parents. They decide those public schools are doing a great job. Fantastic. They're going to stay with those schools. But if they decide, you know what, we're going to try something better we think will work for our child, I don't think it's the state's role to block them from doing so. That is their choice. And, you know, we're not forcing that choice upon them, but I think we should at least allow the option because it is their money and it's their children's future. And, you know, our whole goal here, Democrats, Republicans, everybody can agree, is to get the best education for that child.
And Senator Beinhardt, you kind of answered the question, the same question a little bit earlier, saying that, the Eau Claire is very close to becoming eligible for this program, and you didn't seem too excited about it. The same question to you. What would be the detriment? I mean, would you not want to see school choice pop up in Alma or in other districts, school districts within your Senate district?
No, I would not. And right now, our schools are really struggling. Gilmanton, which is just south of Eau Claire, just had a $400,000 operating referendum pass, and their property taxpayers are now paying another $400 per $100,000. And they did this simply to keep the school alive. The people at the school have told me that they'd never be able to do it again, and if they can't get more state aid, eventually that school is going to close. The superintendents in the whole area in Buffalo County, all of my local schools are telling me that they need to have changes in this budget that bring more dollars, not less dollars, to the schools. What Tony Evers proposed in his budget, the fair funding for our future, the changes in the formula, and especially programs like Sparsity, which brings money to rural schools, high transportation aid, high special education costs, bilingual, which is a real big problem in Arcadia, where half of the entering primary school students do not speak English as their first language. The career and technical education, the what's called science, math, technology, and engineering grants. These are all pieces that Tony Evers proposed in his budget, the state superintendent proposed in his budget, and the governor did not fund. And if I look at the details of that budget, if I was writing the budget, that is where I would go to improve our local schools. I do believe, and I can show, I just showed Representative Souter the graphs, where there's a dramatic falling in the public dollars for education, and there's a steep increase in the private dollars for the dollars, public dollars for private schools. The way the budget is written, the current budget that the governor has proposed level funds schools. So even there's a slight increase in the dollars going to schools, that those dollars are going to offset property taxes. They're not going to the school to help buy art teachers and special ed teachers and new textbooks, the things that our schools very much need.
With that, let's go to the phone lines. We've got Richard and Stanley calling. And Richard, you're on the air with Representative Souter and State Senator Kathleen Beinhardt. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Well, I believe Mr. Souter said that when a student leaves from a public school and goes to a voucher school, that the public school doesn't lose any money. And it's my understanding that there's X amount of dollars attached to each student, and when the enrollment goes down, the money goes down as well. And the school district would lose whatever money is being spent on that particular student in that particular district.
Okay. Thanks so much, Richard. A reminder to the other listeners out there, we can take your call at if you call in at 1-800-228-5615. Representative Souter, what about that? Is it the same amount that follows a student that goes to a voucher school versus a student that goes to a public school? And doesn't that, you know, logically mean that if a student leaves and they take that money with them, that means less money for the school, the public school?
Well, your caller is right, and I did not mean, if I stated it incorrectly, I apologize. But no, I'm not saying that the money stays with the public school no matter what. I guess my point here is that in many instances, it costs more. Let's look at Milwaukee Public Schools. It costs much more to educate a child at Milwaukee Public Schools than it does at the private schools. So actually, it costs less for those parents to send their children and for taxpayers to fund those children to go to a private school. I believe, from my experience and the information that I've received over the years, that those parents that have come to talk to me said they're getting a better education for their child. And that's up to them. Mm. But at the same time, if it's costing less and there's competition and their children are getting a better education and performing better as a result, I see no reason why we would even think about closing the program. That's why we're thinking about expanding it, because it's been so successful and because private schools are doing a better job than some of the failing schools like Milwaukee Public Schools in terms of the amounts it takes to educate those children and do a better job in doing so. So if that can happen in other areas where you have failing schools, yes, I think that experiment should be tried. And we should allow for parents to make that choice. But some parents are right now just forced to go and stay with the failing public school, and they don't have the other option. And if they do, they have to pay for it themselves, and usually they can't afford to do so. And again, it is their money, and it is their choice. And it's about the child. It's about the child's education and future. And how we allocate those dollars depends on the success of those schools. And if they're failing, maybe they do need some competition. I see nothing wrong with that. And I know many people will try to protect the system. That's, obviously superintendents are part of the public school system and that system. And I don't blame them for being opposed to school choice. But what you have to talk to are the parents and the individuals that really think maybe our children could do a little bit better at a different school. And if those options are available, it's up to them. So, yes, the money does go with the child and will go to the private schools. But what I meant to say was, when that money goes to the private schools and doesn't go to Milwaukee Public Schools, it is not at the expense at the schools in the Senator's district or my district. Mm-hmm. By law, that cannot happen. So I hear from time to time people saying, you're robbing our public schools, our hometown schools, to send the money to Milwaukee. That is not the case. That is written in the law, and it's been proven just a false claim. And I hear it from time to time, and that's why I try to correct things like that I hear on programs like this.
And we could probably spend the whole hour talking about school choice and the voucher program, but one last question with K-12 schools as pertaining to Governor Walker's budget. Representative Souter, you mentioned that you think that the Joint Finance Committee or the legislature as a whole might boost funding for public K-12 schools. Where would you like to see it? How much extra would you like to see going to our public K-12s?
Well, I think that's a debate we're going to have between the two houses. And I know there are many people on all different sides of this issue. There are some out there saying, there should be no increase. There are some out there that are saying, there should be, $300 million increase. There will be an increase. I certainly can't, sit here and tell you what that will be. Mm-hmm. If I had a crystal ball, I do believe that it's going to depend on two things. The financial report that comes out in the next couple weeks from the Legislative Fiscal Bureau in terms of where we're at in our state fund balance, and frankly, what we do with some of the money we just found with the UW. Now, I'm not saying that will go to public schools, but I do think it overall resources, we have to take a look at what we have and where we're going to spend it. I do think there will be an increase, and I think the Senator and I can agree. over the governor's recommendation. But that I won't fault the governor for that because, you know, we're going to be dealing with different numbers and we're dealing with 132 legislators as well. So I think those dynamics, so we're working with the governor's office, but we're going to, at least on our side of the aisle, we're going to make sure that those dollars are followed with accountability and transparency. We want to make sure that, you know, we're not just throwing money in some cases, just throwing money out there and hoping it does good. We want accountability, we want performance, and we want to make sure the money is going where it's supposed to, and that's the classroom.
And Senator Vinehout, what would you like to see? Do you have any numbers in mind for an increase in the funding for public K-12 schools?
My local school superintendents are telling me that just to stay even with their rising costs and the cost of expenses that they have, they would need $230 per student. That translates roughly to a little less than $300 million. I think that there's it's in this particular budget, when we're looking at increasing revenues, there's more in this budget. There's about $3 billion more than in the last budget. We definitely can meet $230 per student. So I would say that's my starting spot. I would also say that it's not just a matter of increasing the equalized aid, which really needs to happen. We also need to increase the categorical aid. And these are the special programs that I talked about a little bit before, aid to rural schools, special education, high transportation costs. This is where the real problems exist with the rural schools.
Well, let me say this. You know, I think the numbers, you know, we'll arrive at, but I can say this. There are a number of members that both Democrats and Republicans, like Warren Petrick and Kathy Bernier from our area, who have talked to me and said, look, you know, let's look at categories too, like transportation aid for rural school districts and sparsity aid. So it's those categories. It's not just throwing money into the pot, but making sure that rural schools are protected too. And they're, you know, they're very adamant about things like that. So I think you have to look at it a twofold approach. What's right for the general aids and the general amount, but also make sure that we are protecting rural schools in the process. And I think some of that has to do with sparsity aid and transportation aid, like Warren and Kathy have been talking about.
Well, I certainly hope that that happens.
And with that,
we're working on it.
With that, let's take our first break for the West Side Legislative Update, roundup, that is. We've got State Representative Scott Suter, a Republican from Abbotsford, and Democratic State Senator Kathleen Vinehout of Alma. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615. Short break. We'll be back in just a minute with more from our lawmakers. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the West Side Legislative Roundup on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for tuning in. I'm joined by Democratic State Senator Kathleen Vinehout of Alma and Republican State Representative and Assembly Majority Leader Scott Suter of Abbotsford. We're talking the 2013 legislation, including the governor's biennial budget. If you've got any questions or comments, give us a call, 800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. I want to talk about the UW system briefly. We always run out of time whenever we start talking about the legislative sessions, but there was some big news recently. Basically, Governor Walker had initially included $180 million for the UW system, but it was reported just this week that the UW system had maintained a massive fund reserve. Some say it's close to a billion. Others are saying it's $680 million when funds that are already locked up are accounted for. Representative Suter, how is this going to change the funding for the UW system in the governor's budget?
Well, I'm not sure, you know, where we're going to arrive in terms of funding for the UW, but you have both lawmakers from both parties who are very frustrated with the university system right now. This has been called a slush fund by both Democrats and Republicans. The reason it's frustrating is because we were told in the last couple of budgets that in order for the university system to maintain its quality, both in terms of faculty and staff and in terms of its ability to educate institutionally, that they need to raise tuition. Now, they raised tuition above 20% over the course of the last few years. Sometimes, you know, it was to the maximum, you know, 5.5%. you know, but it fluctuated, but each time it was an increase.
Mm-hmm.
Though that cost students a great deal of money. At the same time, they were carrying massive reserves to the tune we just found out yesterday, to, you know, almost $1.2 billion. It is frustrating that at a time when we were told that we were cutting the university to the bone and jeopardizing their performance, and as a result they needed to sock it to through tuition to students and fees, that they were squirreling money away to the tune of over $1 billion. And now we find this money because we found it. It wasn't as though they came forward and said, hey, we got this pool of money. What should we do with it? No, we had to find it because we had to dig for it. So they got caught. And that is frustrating because it's a question of trust now between the UW system, how they spend their money, where they're putting these money in literally thousands of accounts, mm-hmm. and what they plan to do with it. So there are those that want to cut deeply into the UW system because they feel there's mismanagement and we need to pull back. There are those that want to take a more balanced approach. But I will tell you this, it is going to be very difficult to give more GPR, general purpose revenue state aid, to the university system when they have these massive reserves. And a lot of us feel, and frankly a lot of parents that I've spoken with, feel they've been lied to. When they had to pay these massive amounts in terms of tuition increases, and at the same time, the university system had this money sitting there. So I don't know where we go with it. I will say this. They have a long way to go to recoup the trust that they had once had with both parties in the legislature. It is very, very frustrating. But I'm also not going to be out there, you know, saying we need to sell off campuses and have, you know, punishment. I think this is forcing – we need to force the UW system to come to us with reasonable allocation methodology and what they actually need for reserves, and tell us what they're spending the money on. And more importantly, tell the regents what they're spending the money on, because we just met with a couple of regents who said, we didn't know. Well, that should not be the case. We need to find out and do a better job to make sure the university system is managing the money they get from students and from parents better.
Senator Vinehout?
I think that we can both agree that the trust between the legislature and the UW system has been fractured. I think that that is most unfortunate. I also think that we should back up a little and look at exactly what was found, in quotes, when we went through a lot of digging. I serve as the ranking minority member of the audit committee, and I spent some time with the document that is supposedly the source of this, assets that are not limited by their source. And I think that when you look at the line that the CPAs in the assembly, Representative Souter's colleagues, so-called found or discovered, there's a lot of numbers in that line that are very opaque. I do agree that the system is unnecessarily complex and that the university has not been forthcoming. But I don't think that we clearly know right now how much of that is reserve and how much of it is committed, because the number can't the dollars can't be both committed and reserve. A reserve is something you keep in a checking account that you use for a rainy day when everything bad happens and you just need the cash. Mm. But a committed fund is something that has already been promised to someone. It's not clear right now how much is belongs to one or the other. I think that this whole surprise, and all of my colleagues that I speak with, both sides of the aisle, are very surprised. It goes back to the very opaque document called the CAFR, or the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. It's prepared for basically bonding agencies to look at the details using generally accepted accounting principles, but it's not very clear what unrestricted net assets means. And we, on the audit committee, directed the audit Bureau to investigate this last Thursday. All of the audit committee members agreed that they needed to, that the audit bureau needed to be in there auditing. That's beginning as we speak. I hope to see some preliminary numbers soon. I do know that it's going to be very complicated, but when the University of Wisconsin-Superior and the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire came and testified this past Monday in front of us at a budget hearing at CBTC, what I heard from them is, please do not be rash, because in these campuses in western Wisconsin, we don't have the so-called slush fund. There's not a lot of extra dollars. And if the university doesn't receive the $181 million that they were promised, then we're going to have to cut programs, we're going to have to cut staff, and it's going to mean that students who wanted to complete their degree in 4 years are going to be looking at 5 years, because the courses simply aren't going to be available.
Well, and part of the problem here, Senator, is that the system claims they don't know. They claim they have no idea what the exact number is in all these thousands of accounts. Now, every institution has their own so-called, I call it a slush fund. You can call it assets that are not limited in their purpose, whatever. But I want to find out what UW-Eau Claire has, and I want to talk to regents that represent the area. I want to talk to Mark Tyler, find out what he knew. So I'll wait for that phone call. But every institution, as I understand it, had some quote-unquote reserves. And these reserves are – there was a huge reserve account in the UW system account, and then there were reserves at each institution. And whether system didn't know, or they couldn't track it, or they weren't told, or they didn't have accurate and adequate standards for their systems, we need to know. But if chancellors are going to come up to us and say, we need this $180 million, and at the same time they had a reserve sitting there, that is like owning a corporation. And you go to your board of directors and say, you know what, we have to raise prices because we just don't have any money, otherwise we're going to have to shut down the shop. When in fact they had money sitting there for the exact purpose of a rainy day. And if the last 4 years were not rainy days, man, I don't know, you know, what a thunderstorm looks like. But I want to find out exactly how much money UW-Eau Claire had, and UW-Milwaukee, UW-Madison, and how much the regents had. And the figures that we received, those were 7 months old. So if there's more money in there, we have to determine how it's best spent. I don't want to go after economic development initiatives or the Carbone Cancer Center or initiatives that make sense for our area, like the nursing school and things that actually help benefit students and keep our economy growing. But at the same time, we need to really put some severe standards in, some reasonable standards in terms of what they do with the money. There's no reason they should have $1 billion in reserves and then coming to the legislature saying, wow, you guys are really cutting us. We got to raise tuition fees. No parent in the world's going to – they don't trust them anymore. They don't buy the argument. And they're mad at us, and they're mad at the system. And that's why I say that trust is very, very weak at the moment. And that's not just from Republicans. It's from Democrats, but it's from parents. And those students deserve an apology. They deserve an apology because they were told, we need to raise your tuition because we don't have any money because the state isn't giving us enough, when they had it in the bank.
Now, speaking of audits, we recently this week heard about some audit results having to do with the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. We'll talk about that when we come back from our second break. This is the Westside Legislative Roundup. We're talking about the 2013 legislative session. Guests include Representative Scott Suter, a Republican from Abbotsford, and State Senator Kathleen Vinehout, a Democrat from Alma. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615. We'll be back in just a bit. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the Westside Legislative Roundup right here on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm joined by two lawmakers from western Wisconsin, Democrat State Senator Kathleen Vinehout of Alma and Republican State Representative and Assembly Majority Leader Scott Suter of Abbotsford. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615. That number again, 1-800-228-5615. A report released yesterday by the Nonpartisan Legislative Audit Bureau, the same one that audited the UW system, found some issues with the public-private agency known as the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. It showed, among some of the things, I'm very generalizing very much here, that WEDC had awarded some grants, loans, and tax credits to ineligible recipients, awarded loans and grants in amounts that exceeded limits, and didn't have policies in place to deal with loan repayments or delinquent loan repayments. Kathleen Vinehout, as a member of the Legislative Audit Committee, what's the next step here? Is there a next step for lawmakers to follow up with this report?
Oh, you bet. There's a lot of steps that need to happen right now. The first step that will happen is next Thursday, the Joint Legislative Audit Committee will meet. We will receive a full briefing on the audit, and then we will hear from the agency itself, from the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. It's a public hearing. Anyone can testify, and it's also carried on Wisconsin Eye and by link on the Audit Bureau website. You can hear an audio version of it. So I would strongly suggest that people come if they can, or if they can't, at least pay attention to what happens. At that time, I will be asking my colleagues to support a bill that was drafted at the end of last year to address some of the problems in the audit that came out last summer. So this is the third in a series of economic development audits. All three of them show very serious problems, but this audit is the most damning of any agency I have ever seen.
What's so bad about it?
The agency repeatedly and flagrantly violated the law. We have very clear standards we have very clear statutory requirements on such things as tax credits. If you receive a job creation tax credit, you're expected to create jobs. There are thresholds for certain types of tax credits. You can't spend any more, for example, than $10,000 creating and receive a $10,000 credit. In one case, there was a contract that was let for a $57,000 for a single job that was created. There are standards and legal laws that say that we cannot backdate the contract. In other words, we can't pay for something that happened before the beginning of the contract. That was violated. We have another standard that says if you're going to create a full-time job, that job has to pay meet a certain payment level, 150% of the federal minimum wage guidelines, and it also has to be a full-time job, i.e. 40 hours a week. There was $62.5 million in tax credits that were given to a company that did not meet that definition of 40 hours a week. So I could go on and on, but I read page after page after page of very clear violations of the law. The agency does not have a clear budget in place. It doesn't have a clear accounting system in place. Evidently, the entire agency for the last year and a half has been run by instead of invoices and requisitions and purchasing orders, employees were told to put purchases on a credit card. And so it's very unclear what many of these purchases were for. In some cases, they're questionable purchases like six-season tickets to the Badger game or personal iPhones or iTunes gift certificate cards. So when you look at the details of this audit, we cannot answer the most basic question that has been the metric that this governor has held up, which is how many jobs are created. It was impossible for the Audit Bureau to verify a single job. Now, the governor frequently says that we did created 24,000 jobs. One single staff member spent almost a year digging through records at the Legislative Audit Bureau, and she could not find one single job that had been independently verified by the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, even though they were required to do this by law.
All right.
This is the beginning of a very, very long investigation.
I'd like to get a response from Representative Souter. Is this another situation where a state agency might have lost the trust, or the trust has been damaged between, the public and the agency, and even between lawmakers and the agency? Representative Souter.
Well, I think it's a question of with WEDC. We WEDC has been going through a change in the past few years. I mean, we authorized the old Department of Commerce to become a public-private partnership.
Mm-hmm.
I still believe in that mission, and I know the governor does as well, so much so that he has changed leadership at WEDC. The governing board is getting more and more involved. We did authorize an audit of WEDC, and yes, there were problems in the past. There are still some existing problems, and we have been finding where there have been difficulties and problems with regard to tax credits that have been handed out, whether they were years past or even recently. What the real problem, I think, at WEDC is they need clear direction in terms of their own ability to define how they do their policies, whether it's how they track procurement policies, what staff have purchasing cards, or the type of purchasing policies that they initiate at WEDC. So there is some confusion there, but I know that the new management team is busy working on that, and I know that the legislature is going to get involved too to give them even more direction so that their policies are followed. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I can't say we should throw out, you know, the WEDC model, because I do believe it is working. I do believe they're creating jobs. They work very, very well with me and my colleagues, both Democrats and Republicans, when it comes to companies that want to come here, companies that want to expand or need assistance. They're there. They're on the ground. Those employees do a phenomenal job. They are experts, and I think we have to give them credit for that. And yes, we do need to make sure that WEDC is following standard procedures. You know, whether it comes to procurement or whether it's about how they spend their own money internally. So yes, we're going to solve that. We're going to help them solve that. Mm. But we have to keep those employees going, because they do a phenomenal job in terms of helping Wisconsin move forward. And that's what we should concentrate on. Now, if they're squirreling away $1 billion in their vault somewhere, in their basement, yeah, then we've got some real problems.
Gotcha.
But I want to take a balanced approach, whether it's the UW system or WEDC. I think we need to find out what the problem is, what the solution is rationally, and go forward from there. But just like the university system, we're not going to throw out those economic development policies that make sense, or the Carbone Cancer Center, or, you know, go after and start cutting away at programs that help people. We're going to help the university system succeed and develop the standards in place that set reasonable limits on their statutory balance. We're going to do the same thing with WEDC and help them create those policies and procedures that make sense, that make sure all of their employees are on the same page. So doing that balanced approach, I give a lot of credit to our audit committee, both Democrats and Republicans, for taking very serious, close looks at this and helping to develop solutions. That's what we should be looking at. And Senator, you're doing that. I appreciate that. So we'll get there. But to throw out WEDC and say, let's start over, is not the correct solution.
I wish we had 2 hours because we are so close to the top of the hour. The last thing I want to bring up is Senator Vinehout has introduced some bills to an issue that I've been following very closely over the past couple of years, and that's frac sand mining. We don't have any time to get into the details of the bills, but it's basically more disclosure and some other regulations for these sand mining companies. Senator Vinehout, do you think you're going to get a public hearing on that very quickly so I can get a response from Representative Souter?
I don't know. I am encouraging everyone that's interested in the sand mining bills to let Senator Tiffany know. I have heard from my colleagues in the Assembly that they're interested in holding a public hearing there. So I'm working with some of my colleagues to introduce them on the Assembly side. But the bills have been assigned to Senator Tiffany's Mining Committee. And if people would like a public hearing, I'd suggest that they give him a call or drop him a note.
And Representative Souter, do you feel that I'm not sure if you've had a chance to look at the senator's bills, but basically, in the most general terms, it's more regulations for this industry. Do you think that's necessary?
Overall, I would say respectfully no, but there are things I think the senator and I can talk about and look at and see where the problems lie. So, I mean, I think our whole goal here is to make sure that those job creators continue with their mission of, you know, doing what they do, and we have the the best sandbox, the most plentiful sandbox in the world here in Wisconsin. So we need those jobs. And if there are problems, we'll do that. But, you know, maybe we do need more air quality regulators at the DNR. I first said no to that. You know, I've changed my mind, and the senator has helped me do that. So we'll see. But I don't want to risk those jobs through any type of legislation either. So we'll continue those talks.
All right. That's our time. I'd like to thank my guests for taking part this hour, Republican State Representative Scott Suter and Democratic State Senator Kathleen Vinehown. Thank you both for being here. I'd also like to thank Team Westside for putting this program together, including Mort Cypress, who handled on-air production, Hannah Weichel for research and helping produce the program, Hillary Cruzan for promotions, and Grace Fair and Dean Collenbeck for keeping the ducks in a row. Tune in next week as we kick off a series of programs highlighting Western Wisconsin's immigrant populations to see how they're faring now. I'm Rich Kramer. Drive safe, and just remember, this snow, it's temporary, it's an anomaly, it's not sticking around very long. Until next week.